Attention, attention, this is History Lost in Time.
And welcome to episode 40 of the History Lost in Time podcast. This podcast is available in German and English on YouTube, Spotify and Podcast.de, with social media presences on Blue Sky and Instagram.
The topic of this episode.
In this episode, I'd like to talk about the Nuremberg Laws, the racial laws of the Third Reich. The focus will be on the Blood Protection Law and the Reich Citizenship Law. I'll only briefly mention the Reich Flag Law.
Political agenda and background.
My goal is to explain what the Nuremberg Laws actually contained and how they were implemented. The existence of these Nuremberg Laws is more or less common knowledge, but what exactly they contained is no longer part of common knowledge. Why am I talking about this? My goal, firstly, is to bring this historical knowledge back into circulation, and secondly, to raise awareness. After the Second World War, many Western societies became accustomed to the idea that everyone is equal before the law and that there no longer is or shouldn't be any legal discrimination based on who one is and from whom one comes. However, it is easy to see that the political climate has become considerably harsher. Language and measures long considered unthinkable are now conceivable and, in some cases, even becoming reality. So why shouldn't something like the Nuremberg Laws reappear in a modified form? Back then, these measures were introduced because of the racial doctrine of the National Socialists. But nobody is stopping an undemocratic government from introducing such a package of measures based on other factors, such as immigration status, gender, religion, skin color, political views, ethnic status, etc. Totalitarian systems don't emerge overnight, but gradually, like a boiling frog that is slowly heated and therefore doesn't jump out of the pot until it's too late. Therefore, inform yourselves, sharpen your senses, so you know what's happening before it's too late.
The sources that were used.
The German language Wikipedia article on the Nuremberg Laws is quite good. I will primarily use the illustration there. I will also use the Goebbels diaries and the house book for the German family from the late 1930s. On top of that, I will quote an excerpt from a Goebbels speech from September 16, 1935. The book sources in more detail: Hausbuch für die deutsche Familie, translation Hausbuch for the German family, published by Verlag für Standesamtswesen Berlin, most likely in the late 1930s. Joseph Goebbels, Tagebücher, Band 3, 1935 bis 39, translation, Diaries, Volume 3, 1935 to 39, edited by Ralph Georg Reuth, published by Pieper Verlag GmbH, München, 1992. A note, this episode is about the racist legislation of the Third Reich. For the sake of simplicity, I will use Nazi terminology. This does not mean that I adopt or endorse it, quite the opposite. However, there is no point in complicating this legislative package by using politically correct and euphemistic terminology. Please take this into account in any feedback. At the 7th Reich Party Congress of the Nazi Party on September 15, 1935, the Reichstag unanimously passed the Nuremberg Laws. These included the Law for the Protection of German Blood and German Honor, also known as the Blood Protection Law, the Reich Citizenship Law, and today the Reich Flag Law is also included in this, although this wasn't the case at the time. It declared the swastika flag as the Reich flag. The Blood Protection Law prohibited Jews from using this flag in any form. This was intended to prevent Jews from using it to disguise their businesses as Aryan. The Blood Protection Law prohibited marriage and extramarital sexual intercourse between Jews and non-Jews. According to the Nazis' racial ideology, this was necessary to keep German blood pure. Sexual intercourse between Jews and non-Jews was called racial defilement and punishable by imprisonment. However, only men, not women, were punished, regardless which of the involved people was Jewish. This provision is attributed to Adolf Hitler personally, who believed that women were sexually immature and could not be punished. Thus, women generally remained unpunished for racial defilement. Over the years, this regulation was expanded. While initially sexual intercourse was necessary for conviction, later a kiss, a hug, or another form of non-sexual physical contact was sufficient. Furthermore, Jews were forbidden from employing German-blooded maids under the age of 45. It was assumed that they would otherwise abuse them. A few figures on the topic of racial defilement. Between 1936 and 40, 1,911 men were convicted of racial defilement. In 1937 alone, 512 men were convicted, two-thirds of them Jews. German-blooded men who had sexual relations with Jewish women received significantly more lenient sentences than Jewish men who had sexual relations with German-blooded women. Jewish men faced several years in prison. 2 to 4 years was the average, but sentences could reach 15 years. In exceptional cases, judges used legal tricks to impose the death penalty, which was then carried out. Marriages between Germans and non-Europeans, for example Asians, Africans, Black Americans, etc., were either forbidden or at least undesirable. If there was the potential for diplomatic complications, for instance if Japanese were involved, applications were deliberately delayed and then rejected after a long wait. Further regulations defined Germans and mixed-race people of various degrees and stipulated marriage rules. This is where the illustration comes in. It can be found in the aforementioned Wikipedia article, but I also have an original from the Hausbook. Every person was analyzed down to the grandparents. Therefore, it was important to know or research one's own family tree and document it in an ancestral passport. The ancestral passport was required for marriages and other official procedures. For most people, it was sufficient to have researched and documented one's grandparents. However, anyone who aimed for higher positions in the Nazi Party or who wanted to become a non-commissioned officer in the SS or farmers that wanted to pass on their farm to the heirs, all of these people had to prove a purely German-blooded family tree dating back to 1800, so about 150 years into the past. For SS leaders, this even extended back to 1750, so about 200 years. When active Nazis suddenly discovered Jewish or foreign males in their family tree, there was a particularly popular method for solving the resulting problems. Mothers, grandmothers, or other relatives had to testify under oath that the spouse was not the biological father, but that a man of German blood had fathered the child in an extramarital affair. This allowed people to fix problematic areas in their CVs and align them with the Nazi ideology. A pure German had to have 4 German grandparents. This allowed them to marry other pure Germans, and their children were then considered of German blood. Marriages with quarter Jews were also permitted. Here, too, the children were then considered of German blood. Marriages with half Jews required a special permit. Marriages with three-quarter Jews and full Jews were forbidden. A second-degree Mischling can be translated as hybrid, mixed-race people, or mongrel, was a quarter Jew, meaning one Jewish grandparent and 3 Germans. Marriages with pure Germans were permitted, and the children were considered of German blood. Marriages with other quarter Jews, three-quarter Jews, and full Jews were forbidden. Marriages with half Jews were possible with a special permit. The logic behind this is not immediately apparent. The status of mixed-race people was controversial among the Nazi leadership. I will go into this in more detail once I have gone through all the categories. A first-degree Mischling was a half-Jew, 2 German grandparents, 2 Jewish grandparents. Marriages with pure Germans and quarter Jews required a permit. Marriages with other half-Jews were permitted, but the children remained half-Jews. Marriages with three-quarter Jews and full Jews were permitted, but the children were considered Jewish. Full Jews were people with three or four Jewish grandparents. The marriage rules for full Jews and three-quarter Jews were identical. Marriages with pure Germans and quarter Jews were forbidden. Marriages with half Jews, three-quarter Jews, and full Jews were permitted. The children were then considered Jewish. There were also a few special cases, which are also listed in the illustration. First special case. A mixed-race person born out of wedlock after July 31, 1936 is considered a Jew. This therefore applied specifically to half-Jews. Second special case. Children of couples that consist of one German and one Jew who were married after September 17, 1935 are considered Jews. In marriages from before that day, they remain mixed-race persons. This therefore provided a kind of protection for marriages that had taken place before the passage of this law. Mixed-race persons were also considered Jews if they belonged to the Jewish religious community or were married to a Jew. In this case, the children were also considered Jewish. The goal of these regulations was to stop so-called racial mixing and gradually eradicate mixed-race people from the German gene pool. Jews were allowed and expected to remain among themselves, as were Germans. This also explains the somewhat complicated regulations for mixed-race people. It's important to understand that the exact regulations were controversial among the Nazis. The less radicals wanted to preserve as much German blood as possible and therefore wanted to integrate quarter and half Jews as much as possible. Hardliners, like Joseph Goebbels, on the other hand, would have preferred to treat half and quarter Jews like full Jews. The compromise, therefore, aims to eliminate mixed-race people as quickly as possible, if possible within a few generations. Here's a quote from the House Book, pages 88 and following. It quotes the then Minister of the Interior, Wilhelm Frick, who made the following statement in the German legal newspaper Juristenzeitung on December 1, 1935, on pages 1390 and following. Mixed-race people generally receive special treatment. Since they are not Jews, they cannot be treated the same as Jews. Since they are not German, they cannot be treated the same as Germans. Furthermore, care must be taken to eradicate mixed-race people as soon as possible. This has been achieved, firstly, by classifying mixed-race people who predominantly lean towards Judaism as Jewish. Secondly, it has been achieved by only permitting mixed-race people with two fully Jewish grandparents to marry persons of German blood with permission. Mixed-race people with only one Jewish grandparent, on the other hand, can merge into Germanness by being allowed to marry persons of German blood without further ado. In order not to delay this, they are forbidden from intermarrying. Incidentally, these permits were rarely granted. Most marriage requests were rejected. The body responsible for processing these applications was a committee within the Ministry of the Interior. What was examined when applying for a marriage permit? 1. Appearance. Did the person look German or Jewish, according to the Nazis' racial thinking? 2. Character. In the mind of the Nazis, did the person have more good German or bad Jewish character traits? 3. What was their family history? 4. What were their political views? Anyone who was a quarter or half Jew and had supported the Nazi party could hope for a marriage permit. Everyone else effectively had no chance. From 1942 onwards, no more exceptions were granted due to the war. Forced divorces of existing mixed marriages, which some Nazis had demanded, did not occur. However, new regulations made it possible to cite race as a permissible reason for divorce. Efforts were made, particularly by the Gestapo and the SS, to take action against non-German-blooded spouses in mixed marriages. Imprisonment for minor offenses occurred repeatedly. Likewise, several proposals were made to legally enforce forced divorces or simply deport the Jewish spouses. In May 1943, however, such attempts were halted by order of the Reich Security Main Office. With the collapse of all structures shortly before the end of the war in 1945, however, some Nazis did take action against mixed marriages. In general, Jews and people of mixed race in mixed marriages had a much higher chance of surviving the Third Reich relatively unscathed. A prominent example of this is the literary scholar Viktor Klemperer. Later in the war, some mixed marriages were also upgraded to so-called privileged mixed marriages. What constituted a privileged mixed marriage was never legally regulated and was therefore handled rather arbitrarily. It primarily affected individuals who were largely assimilated and not members of the Jewish religious community, but who were considered Jewish in the Third Reich due to their ancestry. Privileged mixed marriages were later exempted from various Nazi measures, such as expropriation and deportation. While measures against privileged mixed marriages were also tightened during the war, they were inconsistent, with strong regional differences, and they continued to be milder than those against Jews. According to the 1939 census, there were 20,454 mixed marriages in Germany. For 1933, the number was estimated at 35,000. In contrast to other marriages, the divorce rate was 20% higher during the Third Reich. However, the Nazis did not succeed in dissolving all mixed marriages. Similar leniency measures for mixed marriages applied in occupied countries, especially in the Western countries. The rules were comparable to those within the German Reich. In the occupied Soviet Union, however, little consideration was given, and in many places even people in mixed marriages and those who were quarter Jews were classified as Jews and treated accordingly. Now to the second law, the Reich Citizenship Law. Its goal was to establish a three-class citizenship: Reich citizens, state citizens, and people who were neither. Reich citizens had to be of German blood or Germanic, and they had to have demonstrated, through their behavior, a special loyalty to the German people and Reich. The granting of Reich citizenship was sealed with a Reich citizenship certificate. Due to the war, however, this was never implemented. The Reich citizens remained a theoretical construct. The law became more significant on the other side, as it permitted the revocation of citizenship. As a first step, Jewish civil servants had to resign at the end of 1935. Jews also lost the right to vote, even though this was meaningless in the Third Reich anyway. Based on the Reich Citizenship Law, regulations were issued that revoked the licenses of Jewish doctors and lawyers in 1938. By a decree issued by Hitler on November 25, 1941, all German Jews living abroad were deprived of their citizenship. Jews deported from the German Reich, for example, if they were transported to a concentration camp or ghetto in occupied Poland, or even further east, lost their citizenship upon crossing the Reich border. With the loss of citizenship, they also lost all property, assets, and all financial claims against the state. Thus, through forced deportation, the Jews lost their citizenship and the Nazi state confiscated the assets of the deportees. A further regulation of the Reich Citizenship Law established the classification of Jews and mixed-race people, which I explained earlier using the marriage table. 1. People with 3 or 4 Jewish grandparents were considered full Jews or Jews. According to the 1939 census, there were 330,539 of these in Germany. 2. People with 2 Jewish grandparents were considered first-degree mixed-race people or half-Jews. According to the 1939 census, there were 71,126 of these in Germany. 3. People with 1 Jewish grandparent were considered second-degree mixed-race people or quarter-Jews. The 1939 census records 41,454 people as such. Half-Jews who practiced their faith or were married to a full Jew were considered full Jews. The term Geltungsjude, which may or may not be correctly translated, I am not sure, with the term eligible Jew, was introduced for them. By 1943, only 31,910 Jews remained in Germany, meaning more than 90% had already been murdered or deported. And of course, there were exceptions to the Reich citizenship law as well. According to paragraph 7 of the first decree of the Reich citizenship law, Hitler personally reserved the right to make exceptions. Hermann Göring was later credited with the phrase, "I decide who is a Jew in my eyes." A prominent example of this is Luftwaffe General Erhard Milch, over whom Göring maintained his protective hand. There were approximately 10,000 applications for preferential treatment. These applications were reviewed by lower courts. Here, racial appearance, character, career, and political views were again examined. World War I veterans and party members had decent chances of success. Nevertheless, the overall success rate was low. Of the 10,000 applications, only a fraction were successful. 2 full Jews, 260 mixed-race people, and 1,300 Geltungsjuden were ultimately granted preferential treatment. Mixed-race people serving in the Wehrmacht had to be discharged in April 1940. However, there were exceptions to this rule. There were also numerous cases in which the Wehrmacht circumvented this order and allowed the mixed-race people to continue serving. Hitler tightened the discharge regulations after the assassination attempt on him in July 1944. All 3 laws contained exceptions and reservations. Furthermore, there were certain ambiguities in their implementation, which made amendments and regional unequal treatment entirely possible. According to the Gestapo, the laws were largely received with satisfaction by the population, as the isolation of Judaism could now be implemented. In Catholic circles, the rules met with little approval. They welcomed only the fact that anti-Semitism was now taking place in an orderly manner and no longer riotous. However, this feedback from the Gestapo should be treated with caution, as the sources were exclusively public conversations transcribed by agents. What people actually thought cannot be easily determined. The Nazi leadership attempted to justify the laws to the population with racial arguments. The following entry, starting on page 88, how fitting, of the House book says, "The National Socialist government, which recognized the importance of race and genetic makeup for the destiny of our people, could naturally not be content with merely enacting laws to protect and nurture genetic makeup. Therefore, the Blood Protection Law was enacted, which aims to preserve the purity of German blood." And here too, there is another contribution from Interior Minister Frick. "According to the experience of history, the survival of a people depends essentially on keeping its blood pure and healthy. German blood does not constitute a separate race. Rather, the German people are composed of members of different races. However, what is peculiar to all these races is that their blood is compatible with one another, and that mixing blood, unlike non-related blood, does not trigger inhibitions or tensions. Therefore, the blood of those peoples whose racial composition is related to that of Germany can safely be mixed with German blood. This is consistently the case with the people settled in Europe. Members of minorities living in Germany, for example Poles, Danes, etc., can therefore also become citizens of the Reich." The rules met with a mixed response within the German Jewish community. Their severe restrictions were regretted, but the fact that there were now regulations that could allow Jews and Germans to live side by side was welcomed. Some Orthodox and Zionist Jews even welcomed a separation of Jews and non-Jews. Consciously or unconsciously, the Nazis picked up on this sentiment. The House book goes on to state, "The Reich Citizenship Law and the Blood Protection Law, as well as the implementing regulations issued thereunder, do not pursue the purpose of placing members of the Jewish people at a disadvantage simply because of their ethnicity. Rather, the elimination of Judaism from German public life and the prevention of further racial mixing are imperative necessities if the continued existence of the German people is to be ensured. The possibility of life in Germany should not be denied to Jews. However, Germany's future destiny will be shaped solely by the German people." However, the much larger group of assimilated Jews who felt German rather than Jewish were offended. In a speech on September 16, 1935, Joseph Goebbels said with a strong ironic undertone, which I will try to replicate, "We hope that these Jew laws will now make it possible to bring about a tolerable relationship between the German and Jewish people." And there's laughter at this point. "I call that clever, that's skillful. But if someone had just said right afterward, 'So these are today's Jew laws, you shouldn't think that's all there is to it next month, and there's nothing anyone can do about that. Next month the next ones will come, and they'll keep going until you are sitting penniless in the ghetto again.' Well, then you shouldn't be surprised if the Jews mobilize the whole world against us. But if you give them a chance, a small possibility of survival, then the Jews will say to themselves, 'Oh, if they start stirring up trouble abroad again, things will get even worse. So children, just be quiet. Maybe it will work out after all.'" And there's laughter and clapping at this point. "And above all, the Jews are not running away from us."
Goebbels in particular was not entirely satisfied with the laws. On September 17, 1935, he wrote this in his diary. See also page 889.
"Jewry has been severely defeated."
The editor noted in a footnote,
"In the debate over the implementing regulations, which came into force in mid-November 1935, Goebbels was among the most radical. He fought vehemently to expel not only full Jews, but also half and quarter Jews and their spouses from Germany. Only reluctantly did he ultimately accept the compromise."
And when the aforementioned implementing regulations came into force on November 15, 1935, Goebbels wrote in his diary, page 909,
"Implementation of the Jew laws. A compromise, but the best possible one. Quarter Jews to come over to us, half Jews only in exceptional cases. In God's name, so that peace will prevail. Place it skillfully and discreetly in the press. Don't make too much of a fuss about it."
Sanctions from abroad, which had initially been feared, never materialized. The USA had originally announced such plans, but then dropped them. However, the Nuremberg laws were only a step, not the end of anti-Jewish laws in Germany. The Star of David was introduced in occupied Poland in 1939. In Germany, it was not mandatory until September 1941. The obligation to wear the Star of David also applied to Jews in mixed marriages. German-blooded husbands of Jewish women and German-blooded wives of Jewish men were later forced to perform forced labor. At the Wannsee Conference in 1942, a final solution for mixed-race people and mixed marriages was discussed. One group demanded the extermination of these people, while another opposed this destruction of German blood and favored forced sterilization. This more lenient view ultimately prevailed. For a while, it was believed that the Nuremberg laws were written and passed in a relative spontaneous and unexpected fashion, on impulse. Indeed, there was a certain amount of hecticness involved in passing the laws during the party congress. Today, however, it is assumed that the laws were already planned, and there are indications of preparatory measures dating back to the early summer of 1935. The mere passage of these laws was probably somewhat hectic, but not the goal of actually getting these laws underway.
A few finishing words.
Let's summarize. The Nuremberg laws were a bundle of individual laws and regulations that made anti-Semitism and racism the law in Germany. People were classified according to their ancestors and were required to research family trees and obtain ancestral passports. There were strict rules regarding marriage and intimate contact. Each person's classification was crucial to their future fate and determined which path was intended for them in the Third Reich. A privileged path as a German-blooded person, a difficult path as a mixed-race person, or a hopeless path to ruin as a Jew. Only a few people were able to escape the worst consequences through exceptions or in somewhat protected mixed marriages. Further regulations and tightening of rules were later built upon the Nuremberg laws, making life even more difficult for Jews and people of mixed race. Only the collapse of the Third Reich in May 1945 brought this racist package of laws to an end.
Thank you. This was History Lost in Time.